This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 10, The Collingwood Captaincy File. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we get a story from Gareth about his time when he was dealing with an England captain, and hopefully that's going to help Saeed. We also have Bonga back. This time he's got knee pain. Let's see if we can help him. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time once again for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Whether it's coaching cricket, whether it's getting better at playing cricket as a batsman, a bowler, a fielder or a wicketkeeper, we've got all the answers for you, all wrapped up into a nice little audio half an hour. My name is David Hinchliffe, and what a panel we've got for you this week. Three superstars, and so many people to introduce that I'm just going to quickly go through everyone who's on the team this week. We're going to get straight into the action. Mark Garraway, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. Hello, Harris.
Hello.
Sam Lavery, Cricket Professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Hello, Labours.
Morning.
And of course, it's a triumphant return. It's the man who's been all around the world for us and dropping in reports, but this week he's here. It's Berners. Hello.
Good day, gentlemen.
Hello, Berners. Hello, hello, hello. Right, so let's crack on with the show. Question this week around Mystery Spin. I've been thinking about this in the week, and the way that people talk about Mystery Spin in the press is that it's one of those things that can't be coached. These guys emerge usually from an Asian country, completely uncoached. They've been bowling with a tennis ball right up until the day they get introduced, international debut, and then they run through sides because no one can work out their carom ball from their doosra. So I think my question is, from a coaching point of view, if you have someone a little bit unorthodox like that, especially in the spin realm, is it something that in certain parts of the world is coached for people, and in other parts of the world they can emerge more easily? What do you reckon, Gareth?
I think traditionally that's been the case, but I reckon that's going to shift because there's been very much a change in approach with coaching, I think, and it's something that we talk about a lot on the show, is allowing people to be themselves as opposed to necessarily working within the confines of any model that a country may have or a group of coaches may have. So I'm beginning to see mystery spinners developing and evolving and moving forward with in the game in England, as well as my trips over to India and Sri Lanka and Pakistan and the subcontinent countries. So I'm seeing a lot more of it, and that really sort of gives me heart that we're beginning to learn how to allow these people to be themselves and add value to them rather than make them work within our model.
Ladies, do you have a model for spin bowling to stick with, or are you more flexible these days than you used to be?
I try and be fairly flexible with the spinners. There are certain guidelines that I'd work to in terms of what they want to achieve, but the method they use to going about achieving it doesn't have to be a hard and fast rule. And I think that it's good to have different ways of doing it, not only so people can learn differently and learn to exploit different parts of their technique, but also obviously because if batsmen can't understand it as well, or batsmen aren't as familiar with the method that you're using, it's going to be more difficult for them. I really think that some people as coaches, and I know it'd be great for me, but as coaches around the country, certainly in England, I think there's more excitement, as Gareth said, in that if there is a mystery spinner out there, and rather than being scared of them and maybe trying to make them conform, it's more of a more of the other way around now. We're really looking to try and grab hold of that person, and even if it's someone we don't feel we can work with personally, because a lot of coaches out there may not feel they have the skills at this stage, but if you do find someone who's a little bit unorthodox, rather than trying to convert them, just trying to maybe push them towards someone who's got some experience in that area, where we can help them develop on their own path rather than forcing them to go along with the same methods that we're using for many of our other spinners, perhaps.
It's always going to be difficult though, isn't it, Berners? Because in countries with more formal coaching structures, you have, you know, you have group coaching in, say, England and in Australia, and kids are coached to play in a certain way. And in other countries, kids just play cricket. They're on the street, they're in the park, they're just playing. There's no, much less formal coaching. So there's more scope for orthodox to come out. Is that what, I mean, you've seen that. You've been around India and different parts of the world. You must have seen that firsthand.
Yeah, absolutely. The raw talent out there is just often lacks a bit of exposure and togetherness in the coaching kind of parameters that are in place in the various other cricket playing nations. But I think that often links into why we see a lot of these guys that quite often have spectacular talent having quite abnormal actions, i.e. occasionally being deemed as chuckers or maybe approaching the crease in a certainly kind of different way biomechanically and in their technique. And that's due to them, like you say, they've played all their lives and they've learned that muscle memory or that desired technique for being able to do that with the ball from ways which have not been coached. So yeah, I guess it's good that they filter through. And I think the world cricket stage has taken note from several key examples of this in ways in which they can play a part in the game at the highest level.
Do you think, Gareth, there's always going to be that conflict there between the kind of the way, the informal way of learning and the formal way of learning, and you have to find a balance? But there's always going to be that those two different ways of doing it, and that's the way it is.
No, I don't think that is, and I think there's been enough of a shift recently. And also, the worldwide television exposure that we get nowadays is so much more than it used to be, isn't it? I mean, I remember, and we've talked about this before, but I remember the only exposure we'd get to cricket would have been on BBC One during the height of the cricket summer, yet obviously there's so much more cricket being played around the world. And now with satellite television in particular, the internet coming into play as well, being able to see different bowlers, in particular subcontinent bowlers over the last 10 years, 15 years, be able to do different things by trying different ways of getting different results, I think has encouraged both players around the world in more conventional coaching setups, and now the coaches, that there's different approaches that can get the ball to bowl doozers or to carom balls or whatever the case. And the great thing is that you now see it being very player-driven. So the kids turn up to sessions and they want to experiment these things because they've been exposed to it on television. And it's up to the coaches to be able to go along with that and to shape that as opposed to stop that from happening. And my experience of working in some coaching teams and going out into coaches' associations and listening to their conversations, that we're becoming really good at allowing those kids to develop and helping them with the way that they want to develop. If a doozer comes along, then we'll go with it. And that's what I'm hearing from everybody.
Excellent. So let's hope that we have a lot more mystery spinners coming through. Unorthodox, mystery, whatever you want to call it. Let's hope that we see a lot more of them coming through all of the game. Okay, let's wrap up the introduction to our yes-no round. And Brothers, as you're back on the show live, you can be in charge of asking questions this week if you like.
Certainly can do.
Three questions, and the team, including myself this week, can only answer yes or no, no matter how much more we want to say. Okay, Berners, fire away.
First question, Trott conned England?
No.
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 Second question, it's easier to make a good batsman into a wicketkeeper than to make a wicketkeeper into a good batsman?
Yes.
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 Third and final question, determination is more important than enthusiasm?
No.
No.
Yes. Time for the mailbag. Two questions. And those questions are answered by the team. Of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is what it's all about. An online coaching course, courtesy of pitchvision.com. You can go and check out the videos there at pitchvision.com/academy, and you can find out more about the kind of coaching you can get from people like Kevin Peterson, Nathan Bracken, Ian Ponce, Gary Palmer, huge range of coaches for all ages and all levels and all abilities. So, Bernard, you've got the questions this week. What's the first one?
First question comes in from Saeed. His question is captaincy related, and he's a 15-year-old wicketkeeper batsman. He plays for his school team, and most of his teammates that he plays with are older than him, and he's saying that they don't have a coach currently. So he's been appointed captain at the start of the season by the headmaster of the school, and their season consists of 18 matches, and they're about 6 matches in so far, and they've lost all of the games terribly under Saeed's leadership. He's saying that personally he played well in the first 3 matches, but after losing 3 matches in a row, he's really lost his confidence with his own game. And instead of working hard, his teammates have started to turn their backs on him and criticising him. So it seems like in the current situation, they now don't want to play underneath his captaincy. So he's given it up. And he's a little bit worried now that if he's not going to be captain and he's lost the faith of his fellow players, that he's now going to be dropped from the team and his season will be left in tatters. So he's really struggling to find a way to get around this situation and just wants some advice from our expert panel.
Well, it's a story of despair, isn't it? And Gareth, where can we start with this one? He's really worried here. He's really struggling. What can we do?
Well, I take you back. I had a similar conversation with an England cricketer on this one, would you believe, many moons ago. And that England cricketer at the time was One Day International captain. And there was never any problem about him being the captain, as there is in this particular situation, because he's a very well-respected person and the team loved playing for him. But he recognised that the weight of captaincy was bringing him down, and his performances were beginning to drop as a result. And he was worried not just about his place in the one-day side on merit, but also about the impact that the weight of captaincy in the one-day game was, how that was impacting upon his place in the test side, because he'd stopped scoring consistent runs in the test team as well. And we went out for dinner one night and had a discussion around the pros and cons, you know, what would be the advantage of staying on as captain, what would be the risks and the threats of giving that up. And ultimately, he came to the decision rather than me. I just asked the questions as what was there to lose, really. And so the next day, he made in his mind the decision to go out and make a decision at the end of the test match that we were presently playing in, that he was going to give up a one-day captaincy. And with that came a weight off of his shoulders. And he went out to bat the next day and scored 158 and put England into a winning position, which they didn't capitalise on. But it didn't do too much damage to Paul Collingwood's game that he gave up that captaincy at that point of his career, because it meant that his batting could come back, his enjoyment for the game could come back. And actually, he was playing in all of the formats of the game on merit at that point, rather than worrying about his position and worrying about the captaincy, which was making his batting go to a level which was under the level that he wanted to hit. So I would say you need to take a risk, and it's a risk well worth taking, of letting the captaincy go, concentrating on your batting, getting the runs back under your belt, and then all of a sudden you might find, just as Paul Collingwood did in 2010, that the captaincy falls back into your lap when you're performing at the top of your game, and you end up picking up a trophy just like he did in the Caribbean in the ICC World T20. So that would be my advice.
Well, my opinion would be, first of all, not to panic too much. Obviously, he is the captain, so he's presumably been playing a leading role. And in 50% of the games so far, he's obviously contributed really well. Given that they've lost the games, I wouldn't imagine that everyone's playing to the peak of their performance. So it's unlikely that he's going to be dropped on purely on performance. The other thing I'd say that looks quite key as well is, he's been the captain, he's been a batter, and he's been the wicketkeeper as well. So it's unlikely that they're suddenly going to be able to reaccommodate without their captain, their batsman, and their wicketkeeper. So I don't think it's something you should panic about. It might be simply that he can relax a little bit more, enjoy his cricket, enjoy his batting, focus on his batting and his glove work, as Gareth said. to try and take the pressure away from him with regards to the captaincy. And he can go back to focusing on his own game. But don't panic. You play a major role on the side. And he's got more than one string to his bow, so he's got options with his game. And put your focus back on yourself and focusing on achieving as much as you can as an individual and play your part within the team rather than worrying about trying to help everyone else out all the time, which sometimes can be detrimental to your own game.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know the situation, but unless there's another keeper snapping at his heels, then, you know, you've got two positions locked down there. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a little bit harsh for him to go out purely because he lost the captaincy. So,
especially when he's clearly done well in three of the games. I mean, if we as batters, for instance, if you say have a strong performance in maybe 9 of your 18 league matches, you're probably reasonably happy with that. A strong performance is probably scoring 40, 50 runs plus. So if he's capitalising on those starts he's getting while he's playing well, then I think he should be a little bit more secure. I think it does say he seems to think that maybe his side isn't supporting him. So maybe it's a little bit more of something he's building up in his own mind slightly. But ultimately, we need to get him feeling comfortable and confident about his game again.
The next question is in from Bonga.
Yes.
Bonga is in South Africa. He's just moved schools. He's gone to one of the top cricketing schools in South Africa. He's saying a lot of pressure on the guys there. They train 3 times a week. Their fitness, it's gone cricket bonkers. Unfortunately, he's torn some tissue in his knee. He's going to be out for 2 to 3 weeks and he's got constant knee problems. What can he do? It's easy, Bonga. You do what I do. Just stand at fine leg every game. get stuck into the tee, pay your match fee and go home.
Yep. Only hit boundaries when you bat. So for a more sensible answer, Lavers, maybe you can a positioning angle on this. Presuming that he's recovered from the injury and he's rehabilitated from the injury, we don't want to get into the injury recovery side of things. But
yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, it'd be nice to know what he meant by constant knee problems. Is that something that he's talking about prior to the actual injury? He's had regular problems prior to that, or is it something that's ongoing now that he's still struggling with it? But obviously, we don't know the answer to that. One of the good things is he's obviously in a position at a school where he's going to have a lot of support, and there's obviously a lot of provision for cricket and hopefully around cricket as well. So you'd imagine at a school like that, if it's one of the top schools in South Africa, that he's probably got some sort of physio support there and some S&C support as well. So one of the things is trying to link up with the physio and the S&C coach and trying to get all three of them together and discuss how he can plan his recovery or how he can plan to manage himself now he has recovered, whether that's changing his workload or maybe to be speaking to the coach and seeing if it's a technical deficiency that's causing the injury. Obviously, we don't know at this stage. But if he can sit down with those people, maybe his coach, the physio, which you'd imagine there would be at a school like that, as well as the any strength and conditioning support he can get as well, and just discuss it through and plan his own personal short and medium term future of how he's going to go about his cricket, and if it means he's got to drop out of some sessions or he's maybe got to be a little bit more careful in the management of his workload, then that's the way he's going to have to go. But until we know more about the specific injury, it's kind of something I'd pass on to the person who's the specialist with him in particular, and that would be the own person on site at his school.
Is there any general strength and conditioning advice you can give about making the joint a more stable and more able?
Well, there are obviously ways you can go about strengthening different joints and strengthening the knees. A lot of the time in a rehab process, it might be at one stage it could be trying to develop the muscle without bearing a load on the knee. So obviously a squat or any sort of jumping is putting a load on the knee, where some sort of extension, whether it's with an extension or a curl, whether it's on the machine or with a band or a TheraBand of some sort, you can do it without loading the same pressure through the knee at the same time. So it would depend on what stage he was in his recovery. Obviously, we'd want to develop the muscle without any load at first if we possibly can do, and then generally reintegrate the load onto the knee, because it has to become accustomed to taking that by the time he gets back to his match practice. Because when he comes in and bowls, or he's running and turning as he's batting, it's going to experience load. So it's generally trying to build the muscle and building up the load that it's going, that's going through the joint impact as well, throughout his recovery. So simple work on any sort of machine or a TheraBand, whether it's an extension movement or a flexion movement, would be a good starting point in developing some muscle tissue around there.
Yeah, and the glutes as well, an important area to strengthen up if you're thinking about the knee joint.
Absolutely, and it's probably something that's deteriorated during his injury. He might find that he's had some a little bit of deterioration in his strength around there, and possibly into the back and core, because he's maybe not been active as much as he could have been. Usually the classic one is you have your few weeks on crutches, and you lose all strength in your knees, your glutes, your hamstrings, your quads, etc. Your shoulders and your forearms and your lats are generally pretty strong because you've been on crutches for a month, but your lower body work needs a bit of recovery time and a little bit more attention.
Gareth, what about from a more of a cricketing point of view? Are there common things that you see that can lead towards knee issues in players?
Well, lots of it is around repetition, and we get a lot of knee injuries in cricket, not necessarily around the programs that we're talking about, but in the knees in cricket, around knees in fast bowlers, and also in people that are doing a high volume of throwing as well. Is something that you see heaps of, and that generally comes down to the alignment of the feet and alignment of the forces against the target that you're trying to hit. So if you can imagine that your front knee is pointing away from a target, maybe you block yourself off in either a throw or a fast bowling position, then you're asking that knee to do some things that it wasn't really designed to do. So I would always look from a cricket point of view, if somebody's talking about a knee. And we've got one lad at the moment that's just had a little flare-up of a knee, and the first thing that we've done is just to check over his basics to make sure that something hasn't changed. As it is in this case, it hasn't changed, so he's been very consistent in the way that his front foot is landing. So we've been able to, with our physio, to eliminate that as a potential cause of issue. But it's always good to check on the alignment of the feet and how that impacts upon the motion of the knee. In their technique. So I find that if people block themselves off, particularly when you're doing maximal throws or maximal pace bowling, that it makes them more susceptible to a front knee injury.
Okay, time now for this week's 60-second rant. Please help us a minute. It's the soapbox. And of course, who else do we have? Come on the show, but Berners. Berners! Yeah, go, Berners, go, go, go.
The flippant nature of captaincy is something which has been on my shoulder for a while now, and just seeing how many of these international teams in particular are now getting different captains for different formats, and the nature in which they seem to come and go is heavily related to their performance, I think. And just having the peace of mind of a strong leader, a good captain, in some ways, I think, epitomises a team and what they're trying to achieve. We've seen it in many teams in recent times, where captain's poor performance has often led to his exit from the team and his non-leadership of the team, which then brings a lot of different discrepancies into the way in which that team's governed, knowing the conditions and building a team. So the essence of my point here is get a good captain, stick with him, allow him to develop his team and his culture into that team. And I think off the back of that, you not only succeed in his form and his presence in the team being able to develop naturally, but you'll naturally breed more success in having that structure.
That is the end of this week's show, but don't disappear yet, because we've got a couple of things that we need to do before we leave. The first of which is decide on a winner of this week's prize, the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. Pitch coachvision.com, and we have Saeed's question about being captain and a wicketkeeper and batting. Not doing very well at any of those things. And Bonga's question is knees. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
Well, I really liked Saeed's question because it was something that took me back to 2008 and to some conversations around Mr. Paul Collingwood. And I think that there could be something in there and also in the response that Sam gave you that can help you out. So, Saeed, you're the winner this week.
Yeah, a great story that was, Gareth. I thought maybe you might, being an old wicketkeeper like me, you might have some sympathy for the knee pain. But you've gone with Saeed's captaincy question. So, well done, Saeed. Now, Bernard, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show and send in their question and have it answered and maybe win that prize, what would they need to do?
They can drop us an email. The address for that is coach@pitchvision.com, or give us a call, and it's 020-323-97543.
We have a Facebook page over at facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, where there's lots of ways to get in touch with us. The social media out there. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can subscribe to the show in iTunes by just heading and search for Pitch Academy. And if you don't want to listen in iTunes, if you want to listen in any other way, then you can download this show and all the back issues as well, going right back to number one when I was just a slip of a lad. And you can do that by heading to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link and following the instructions for subscribing to the feed. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.